Yeah.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Savage Nation, welcome to the program. Some people think Friday's a throwaway day. As I said to you last Friday, it has the largest audience of the week, according to the latest statistical analysis of radio listening audiences. So to me, Friday is not a day to say open mic and call on anything, and I'm not doing it. I have very big topics to talk about. Welcome to the program. And some of the topics we're going to talk about are carryover topics from the rest of the week, including the Salon article about Michael Savage by Robert Henley, the talk radio godfather of Trumpomania, what Michael Savage can tell us about America's white working class, and the other article, which was so well written it was shocking, Caleb Horton, MTV, about hell's been empty, he says, welcome to Donald Trump's America, it's been waiting for you quite a while. The writing was astonishingly good. If I were going to have a biographer, I would hire Caleb and Robert to write my official biography. Because one thing I like is literature and literacy, and we don't have any literacy on our side of the aisle to speak of, almost none. It's didactic, it is simple, it's monolithic, it is dull, and it is boring. Of course, except for my books and my radio show, which is what they've noticed. But I looked into some of the writers, rather, and I think what I see here is that they realize in their own way, without saying so, that they have been duped by their own progressive rhetoric, and they realize that they're being pushed aside in their own worlds. And in a strange way, I think that when they go behind the booth, the secret ballot booth that we have, you know, you can vote in private, not like in North Korea, as Obama would like, they may just pull the lever for Donald Trump. Because they're part of the white working class, so far as I can tell, and they realize the handwriting's on the wall and they're going to be rendered obsolete. That's one topic, and I would invite your calls on that if you'd like, meaning I can say to you, are you a left-winger or a progressive who's awakened to the fact that the handwriting's on the wall and you're being made obsolete? Here's another topic. Bill Clinton gave an astonishing attack on the Black Lives Matter thugs yesterday in a way no other candidate would have the guts to do. And I said to myself, Bill Clinton would be a better candidate than Hillary Clinton because he knows how to control the mobs. I saw the real Bill Clinton come out, the old guy with the gray hair who's kind of, you know, sort of walking off into the sunset, disappeared, and the really tough Bill Clinton, who was president, suddenly came out and he stood up to the mobs. They couldn't believe what they were hearing. Now, the left went crazy and said Bill is sabotaging Hillary. Does she need him on the campaign trail? My position is the opposite. Somebody has the guts to stand up to the mobsters, and it's Bill Clinton. The Republicans certainly don't. They're terrified of them. No question, but it's a statement. Then we have Bernie does the Vatican. That's right. Bernie Sanders, a fellow traveler of Karl Marx and Pope Marx, is going to speak at the Vatican because they agree with him on his income redistribution. They agree with him on the fraudulent climate change data, which is all fake. And so there's Bernie Sanders leaving the campaign trail to go to the Vatican of all places. And I really have to ask you, does this not tell you how prescient Michael Savage was when in the book Government Zero, I spent an entire chapter on the Pope, not just with a diatribe, but with analysis of his positions on climate. And I wrote a chapter entitled Lenin's Pope. I want to talk about that. Another topic is the book about Teddy and Me arrived. It's gorgeous. It really is stunning. I want to read you from Teddy and Me. It won't be out until, I don't know, May something, before Mother's Day. It's a beautiful book. And then, of course, we have Rock and Roll Friday at 855-400-7282-855-Savage. But I would be remiss if I did not mention an article that came out today in the Daily Caller. I almost fell out of my chair. It arrived 4 minutes before the show. But it's just, Let me put it this way. We all hear that the mainstream media is bought and sold and it's owned, and we know that. But what about the alternative media? What about people in the media who you think are above being, let us say, influenced by money, who it turns out are bought and sold by the GOP establishment, even though they pretend they're not part of that establishment? This article, Daily Caller, April 8th, 2016, just came out minutes ago. It's based in part on a January 13th article by the Daily Beast, written by Ben Jacobs, called Pay to Play. Politico now. Ben Jacobs in the Daily Beast wrote an article entitled Pay to Play? And in that article, Ben Jacob noticed in that article that now appears to have been scrubbed from Politico's website, and it reported on how GOP establishment was buying certain hosts by buying remainder copies of their books at full price. Now, if this is true, if it is true that the Senate Conservative Fund, the SCF, a fake conservative fund founded by former Senator Jim DeMint of South Carolina that backed Ted Cruz in his Senate fight against Obamacare, spent almost $427,000 to buy copies of a certain host's four-year-old book to give out to donors. My friends, what does that tell you? The headline is, the GOP establishment money funding Glenn Beck, Eric Erickson, and other hosts to attack Donald Trump. This may be Plugola, which is an illegal act. This may be Plugola that, if the FCC looks at it, could create a huge problem. If it is true, as published in the Daily Caller, if this is true, this could cause not only an embarrassment, but a legal problem, not only for the individuals named, but for the syndication companies that syndicate them. Now, I'm not hoping this happens. I hope it doesn't happen. But, you know, I would be remiss to not report this to you for two reasons. One, because it's going to go viral in the next several days. And two, because it impacts me as well. You know how it impacts me? Because I have absolutely nobody funding me in any way to control what I say. In fact, I don't even know what the individuals who I work with in this syndication company, I don't know what their politics are. We have never had a political discussion. I don't know who they support. They could support Sanders. I wouldn't know it. They've never influenced me or try to tell me what to say or what not to say. I have nobody buying my books in an attempt to influence me. Nobody has come to me and said, Savage, you know, Stop the Coming Civil War is remaindered. We can buy them for 50 cents a book. But I'll tell you what, we'll pay you $25 a book. We'll buy half a million copies of $25 to give away to our donors if you'll support candidate X. First of all, I wouldn't do it. Second of all, it could land me in jail if I did it. And thirdly, it would make me a whore, which I am not. The only thing I have to offer you is my integrity. Nothing else. I was told the first day I went in this business by a man who owned a number of radio stations, and they were all music stations. He was a powerful attorney, a Democrat, by the way, who ran John F. Kennedy's White House. But I knew him socially through another gentleman. And he said to me, just remember this. I think he's long gone now. He said, Michael, you're entering the political arena in talk radio, and you have such great talent. You're going to go a long way. You're going to be famous. But he said to me, I caution you, the only thing you have is your integrity. He said, that's all you have to remember. That's what he said to me. Well, I knew that a long time ago because my father taught me the same thing, and it wasn't about radio or writing. He said, it's all a man has is his honor. That's how he put it. It's something that the street knows. The street knows honor. It doesn't know anything else. You can't buy honor. You can't sell honor in the street. And that's all I want to say on that issue. So these are some of the topics, my friends, and they're huge topics, from the Salon article to the topic of Plugola, about secret forces buying opinions on television and radio, which is awesome. This is an awesome story that's coming out in the Daily Caller today, April 8th, 2016. And I want you to think about this, because we know the mainstream media is rotten to the core, biased to the core. But did you know that it may not just apply to the so-called mainstream media? We have to pay attention to the curveballs. And that's the opening thus far. The phone number here I invite you to call is 855-400-7282. I want to go back to the first issue. Before I went to sleep last night, I reread for my own pleasure Robert Henley's article in Salon, calling me the talk radio godfather of Trumpomania. I didn't reread it because it was complimentary, because it isn't entirely complimentary. I read it because the writing was so remarkable. Some of the phraseology was so remarkable. I'll read you some of the phrases. Roger wrote, Mr. Henley wrote, Savage calls liberalism a mental disorder, and he blames it for the disintegration of a national cohesion that gave America the backbone to conquer fascism in the Second World War and the persistence to outlast the Soviet Union in the Cold War that followed. For Michael Savage, the classical foundations of Western civilization are innately superior to whatever else is out there. He wrote that. I didn't. But he wrote it in a way that I never... I mean, he wrote it better than I could. He actually found the seminal essence of my whole show. He understands the zeitgeist of my show. He then writes, yet he will go on populist rants denouncing U.S. multinationals for outsourcing tech jobs. He has zeroed in on the bipartisan tradition of elected officials that go on to enrich themselves by doing the bidding of corporations and even foreign interests. And then, astonishingly, here is a left-wing magazine, Salon, with an author who's obviously a progressive, I think so, who remembers the Dubai ports deal and my role in stopping it. And he says, in the end, Savage prevailed and Dubai ports world went packing. For the swelling ranks of the Savage Nation, that was the beginning of the end for the Bush brand of mercantile republicanism. What a line that is, mercantile republicanism. And then he says this. Savage, elected by nobody, had moved the nation and stopped the deal that all the smart money was convinced would sail through. He had undermined a sitting Republican president with a big chunk of the base that had elected him. I've never seen anything equivalent to this on the conservative side of the ledger, have you? And so, my friends, what I'm saying to you today is a repeat, in a way, of what I said to you yesterday. If you exclude everyone whose politics does not match yours on the face of it, you're excluding a big chunk of America and a big chunk of intelligence. Be very forewarned what I just said to you, or you'll wind up painting pictures of yourself somewhere in North Dakota. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth and financial future. Call 1-800-289-2646. Turn it off. I don't want to hear a terrible song. Not interested. So let's begin with the Bill Clinton standing up to the Black Lives Matter thugs. He did it in a way that no other politician could do it or would do it. I'm sure that if Obama really could speak his mind, he'd say the same thing. Bill Clinton would be a better candidate than Hillary Clinton. Listen to clip one.
I don't know how you would characterize the gang leaders who got 13-year-old kids hopped up on crack and sent them out onto the street to murder other African-American children. Maybe you thought they were good citizens. She didn't. She didn't.
Right on.
You are defending
right on,
the people.
Bill. Give them hell.
Tell the lies you say matter. Tell the truth.
Now, that's Bill Clinton saying something that no other politician dare say. Think about it. You have to think about the profound meaning of this particular soundbite. He's the only politician with the guts to stand up to these thugs who have used race as a weapon. Listen to clip two.
I like protesters, but the ones that won't let you answer are afraid of the truth. That's a simple rule. Be afraid. Very, very afraid. Here's what happened. Let's just tell the whole story. When I became president, the headlines in the newspapers were full of... Now, wait a minute. I listen to you. You listen to me. You know what else you don't want to hear? Because of that bill, we had a 25-year low in crime, a 33 low in the murder rate, year low murder rate. And listen to this. Because of that and the background check law, we had a 46-year low in the deaths of people by gun violence. And who you think those lives were? That matter. Whose lives were saved? That matter.
See, this is the real Bill Clinton. I mean, he didn't become president by being a kindly old man with gray hair. There's a lot of fire left inside of him. And finally, he had enough of the garbage they were slinging at his wife. Whether you like her or not is irrelevant. He's on the campaign trail, and he wasn't going to be steamrolled by the mobs. So he said, you are defending the killers of black people yourself. But they didn't like hearing that. I think this is a big moment in American politics, and you should make a note of it. And now many of you don't understand what I'm even saying to you because you're a two legs good, four legs bad type of people. Unfortunately, that occurs across the political spectrum. Two legs good, four legs bad, right out of Animal Farm. He's not our friend. Why do you glorify him? Solana's not our friend. Why do you read from them? You don't understand nuance. You don't understand subtlety. You don't understand anything if you can't understand something. So try to understand what I'm saying to you. Bill Clinton gets a lot of credit for standing up to the mobs. He's the only one who did it. He'd be a better candidate than Hillary would. 855-400-7282 is my phone number. Howard on WEZS Radio. Howard, what's on your mind?
This article ties in with what you said. It's a cleverly disguised but timely writing of literary excellence, and it's designed to be a wake-up call to the power people who really care about the future of their country. The liberal intellectuals are truly concerned, and they're scared, and they realize the dangers of unrest and chaos ahead, no matter whether it's Clinton or Sanders or Cruz or Trump. The status quo is gone, and they worry their own well-being and prosperity.
Howard. Amazing. May I send you a copy of Government Zero or Teddy and Me?
Teddy and Me. I have all your other books.
Thank God somebody wants to see Teddy's beautiful face before he goes to heaven. A big, big day here. A big day on the Savage Nation when the left-wing salon remembers the Dubai port deal and the role you played in it, and those on the right don't remember anything.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7287.
Why am I not interested in rock and roll today? Let's not do Rock and Roll Friday. I don't have it in me. There is so much profoundly important news out there that there's no room for levity or joy, which unfortunately for me is the oxygen, or the helium rather, that I need for the show. Without levity and joy, it's just a dirge. It's like being in a bunker in London during the Blitz. You know, Edward R. Murrow reporting from an underground location. I don't want to do that. I really don't want to be the guy in the bunker. I was that in 1994 when it was a novelty for a couple of years. But here we are. This article that just came out in the Daily Caller is a game changer. If it's picked up by the major media, it's the end of the road. I don't know how to put it. We know that the mainstream media is rotten to the core. We know it's influenced by corporations, by the Democrat Party, by the Republican Party. We know that. And so we turn to alternatives. But now we find out that the other media is also bought and sold, and they name names. GOP establishment money funding Glenn Beck, Eric Erickson, and others to attack Trump in ways that seem to be legal, but in fact may not be legal. In other words, if you buy somebody's remainder book, let's say a fund, a PAC, the Senate Conservative Fund, if this is true, which funded the Senate Conservative Fund, founded by former Senator Jim DeMint, who backs Cruz in the Senate fight against Obamacare. Let's say that you find out that they bought $400,000 worth of copies of a book that's 4 years old, a remainder book, to distribute to donors, that kicks back to the writer of that book $1 million in royalties, as it is stated in this article. and then that individual starts to attack someone they want to attack. What does that tell you? Does it tell you something, or you don't care about it? Is your mind so made up that only the mainstream media is corrupt, and you can't accept the fact that there may be some influences that you didn't know about? On our side of the aisle, there must be something to explain Glenn Beck's pathetic insanity. Crying, getting on his knees, going on stages with tears and teddy bears, holding up Bibles. There must be something to explain Glenn Beck's theatrics. It's called Greenbacks. There must be something about this unknown guy, Eric Erickson, who nobody ever heard of. Now, all of a sudden, he was picked up from obscurity. He has no following whatsoever. And he becomes a moderator in the Republican debates to attack Republicans like Trump. There must be some reason he was picked by the GOP establishment, like Rince Prius, forget his real name. I can't pronounce it. It's easy to remember Rince Prius, the nonentity vanilla guy who runs the, is the face of the Republican National Committee. Rince Prius handpicked this guy, Eric Erickson, to attack Trump as a so-called moderator. How did that happen that they pick an unknown, unrated talk show host to do that? Why? Because the Republican Party did it. That's how they picked this unknown guy to attack Trump, because that's what they used him for, like Machine Gun Kelly. So if you read that article in the Daily Caller today, April 8th, 2016, about this backroom dealing, you'll see as the spearhead of the Dump Trump movement, the same GOP establishment, big dollar donors and PACs that are pushing House Speaker Paul Ryan as a dark horse presidential candidate despite the big government omnibus budget deals Ryan reached last year with Obama, are funding Eric Erickson, Glenn Beck, and others to promote Senator Ted Cruz, according to this article. And then they cite other sources, including sites that you may have heard about, such as the Daily Beast, Politico, which now pulled down the article all about this. It's been removed. Why would Politico remove it? Why? Because Politico is a Democrat front group, was friendly to the Democrats, and they want Cruz, not Trump, because they know Cruz can be defeated by Hillary, according to this article. Well, there's more to this story, and it's going to come out. ConservativeTreehouse.com. Now we go to them, and this is shocking. I mean, because if this is true, and I wouldn't be reporting it if there wasn't any veracity to it. They can't make this up or they'd be sued. Boy, oh boy, this is shocking. It says, all those in the Salem Media Communications Network, along with Glenn Beck, Ben Shapiro, Eric Erickson, and others, and anyone who was hosted upon the various media enterprises that they front for, all are paid shills dependent upon political graft, according to the ConservativeTreehouse.com. Now, I don't know who the Conservative Treehouse is, but that's their opinion. They're talking about possible corruption in alternative media, which should be a wake-up call to all of us who are concerned about corruption in the major media. Do you understand this? I hope you do. I don't have to scream and yell in order to make my point. Then I played Bill Clinton standing up to the Black Lives Matter thugs in a very powerful way. And I say kudos to Bill Clinton for having the guts to stand up to these thugs who want to take control of every venue that they enter. This is a shock that he would do it. No one else did it. But I've saved the best for now, which is Bernie Sanders, the street communist from New York, who is suddenly going to the Vatican. This is astonishing on 3, 4, 5 levels. First of all, why would the Pope agree to see this political hack? I thought the Pope was supposed to be a religious figure. Now, we know he's not. We know that the first non-European Pope picked in 1400 years was picked specifically because he was a communist. And it has been his whole life, a fellow traveler of the communist socialist bloc. The same forces that foisted Barack Obama on us have picked this Pope. And don't think the Pope is that there's a monolithic support for the Pope inside the Vatican. The opposite is true. There's a revolution brewing inside the Vatican because of this communism coming out of the Pope's mouth. They don't like it any more than I do or you do. And many Catholics have turned off from the church because of this Pope, because everything they believe in, he stands against. So now how does it turn out that Bernie Sanders is invited by the Pope to go to the Vatican and kiss his ring? This is unheard of for an American candidate to be invited to the Vatican, because it means that no longer do we have a separation of church and state. In fact, we have the church meddling in affairs of the state, which is a gigantic issue if you pay attention to it. So how does this preposterous man, this zealot of the political world, Bernie Sanders, get invited to the Vatican? Well, we looked into that as well. And this is another, how many times can I use the word shocking? Bloomberg, Mike Dorning, John Folan, Sanders accused of discourtesy in seeking Vatican invitation. A senior Vatican official accused Democratic presidential candidate Bernie Sanders of showing a monumental discourtesy in his lobbying for an invitation to a church-sponsored conference on economic and environmental issues for political purposes. So Sanders went to New York yesterday and gave a speech. Cruz bombed there, by the way. They gave him the Bronx cheer. They threw him out of the Bronx. I guess he thought that with a Hispanic last name, they would cheer him on a chariot, but they didn't buy his act. In plain English, they didn't buy Ted Cruz's act. So Sanders gave an interview in New York yesterday, and he said he's excited about this invitation from the Vatican. But actually, he forced them to take the invitation. Margaret Archer, president of the Pontifical Academy of Social Sciences, which is hosting the conference Sanders will attend, said in a telephone interview to Bloomberg, quote, Sanders made the first move for the obvious reasons. I think in a sense, she said, he may be going for the Catholic vote, but this is not the Catholic vote, and he should remember that and act accordingly, not that he will. In other words, they know what they're getting there. The deli man cometh. The seltzer man cometh, and they know what they're going to get. They're going to get spritzed by him, and they're aware of it. They're putting on their raincoats and their galoshes as the seltzer man arrives in Rome on a pollution-spewing jet. I don't assume is he sailing across the Atlantic in a eco-friendly sailboat? No. He's flying the same way we all do, with evil hydrocarbons spewing into the atmosphere, another hypocrite of the highest order. So look, this is what's going on. And my job in radio is to point out hypocrisy. It's that simple. Even my own, when it appears. And I do if I can. I try not to be hypocritical. If I am, and I find myself being a hypocrite in any way, I try to expose it before it's exposed by others. It's all I can do. I'm too long in the game to risk embarrassment, to be frank with you. A very famous sage wrote this. I think it was a famous Jewish sage hundreds of years ago. He wrote that a man can spend his entire life building up his reputation, and in one mistake he can destroy it all. I never forget certain things. That's one of the things I try to remember. I try to walk that line. Sometimes it's really difficult. It's not easy if you're a human being. Anyone who tells you otherwise is lying to you. Another religious figure once said to me 30 years ago, he said, Michael, do you think I'm made of stone? He said, you think I feel nothing? You think I have no temptations? Do you think when you see these men with the black coats and the black hats running around, they're not human beings? He said, they wear these garbs and they wear the thing on their head to remind them that there's a higher authority, that they're not God themselves. And that's what they use to keep themselves, if they can, on a straight line. And God knows they don't succeed at all times. We know that. Don't get me started on that, the corruption of the religious, whether it be one religion or another. My God, it gets bad. And so, it's open mic to Mike Friday. I guess we can take some calls. I haven't yet gotten to the next delicious item. And it's a smorgasbord of delicioso today. And that is, you know, I went behind the scenes of the Salon article. I became interested in the man's writing because I said he writes so well. Who is he? So I looked up Robert Hennelly's other articles on Salon.com. And lo and behold, what did I discover? That this was not the first well-written article that he had published. And that he already had written an article prior to this. I can't pull it up right now because I'm on another window. And he talks about he's 60 years old. He has two children out of college who are paying off their college debts. He's a white guy, 60 years old. And he says that he had to take a job at night to supplement his income, working in a supermarket as a stockman at his age. Because he used to make a dollar a word as a writer years ago. That was about the going rate for publications. And now the publications have gotten so pecuniary, being owned by people who squeeze every dollar to the top, they screw the writers as best they can, that he makes pennies on the dollar and he can't afford to support himself anymore. So the man at his age, being as brilliant as he is as a writer, has to go work at a supermarket stocking shelves at night. And then I said to myself, I wasn't wrong yesterday when I read between the lines of the article. And I said, this man has gotten the Savage message, and so has he gotten Trump's message. Whether he believes Trump is sincere or not is irrelevant. See, that's the thing you don't quite grasp. Many of you say, look, Trump is a rich guy. He never was a working class guy. How could he represent the working class? That's your fundamental flaw, or your fundamental mistake. Does Hillary Clinton represent the poor black? And yet she poses herself as an individual who identifies and works for the poor black. Does she represent the poor white with the hundreds of millions flowing into the Clinton library? Of course not. So are they all just demagogues and liars? Let's hope not. We know what Hillary is, that's not even a question anymore. We've seen her in action. But we really don't know whether Trump will follow through on his ideas or not. I'm taking the gamble that he will. He's on the line. He says, I'll build that wall. He said it on my show Monday. I said, are you still saying you'll build a wall? Yes, we're going to build that wall. Okay, so he said, well, what do we need the wall for? That's irrelevant. He's on record saying, I'll build that wall and stop the flow of illegal aliens into America who are undermining the middle class. Well, they're more or less not undermining the middle class. The individuals coming from South America are not really undermining the middle class. They're undermining the poor class, which you could say in a way is undermining the middle class because it raises our taxes, because we have to pay for the associated social services of those coming across the border, such as hospital, medical, legal, you name it. We're paying for it. So who's it come from? It comes from the middle class through taxes. Middle class has no way out of taxes. The upper class, the rich, and I mean the super rich, I mean the Microsofts, I mean the Facebooks, I mean the Googles, I mean those people. Make no mistake about it, we're talking about magnitudes of difference that you can only understand if you have money yourself. They don't pay fair share of taxes. They're the real robber barons of this day, in my estimation. If you set up a company in Ireland and use the triple Irish tax trick that was invented by former IRS lawyers who now work for Google, Microsoft, etc., and Facebook, you tell me that that's not outright thievery? They're not paying their fair share. You talk about closing a loophole. You start at the top, you don't start at the bottom, Jerry Brown. You start by squeezing Facebook and Google, not by squeezing the most productive citizens in the state of California, Jerry, because you'll have nothing left if you keep it up. I'll be back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. I could ask you what you think about the stories I've mentioned so far, and I guess you're thinking about what you think about them. So you can call me. We have one open line at 855-407-282. We are talking about Bernie does the Vatican, Bill Clinton standing up to Black Lives Matter thugs in a way no one else dares to do, why there's no reaction to the Salon and MTV articles anywhere, even though it's an... I don't know what phrase to use other than it's a news story that left-wing blogs would cover a so-called, or shall I say so-called left-wing blogs, would cover a so-called right-winger like me, because I'm not easily defined, by the way, and do so in such a political manner that you'd have no commentary. If people are in politics and they're part of the commenting class, why are they not commenting on these remarkable articles? Why? Because it's about Michael Savage. And anything positive about me, even in an obtuse way, is like something positive about Trump. And there you have it.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Hey, thank you. Welcome to The Savage Nation Rock and Roll Friday that opens no lines at 855-400. Goodbye, because all the lines are sold out. Well, a little bit of news to report. Breitbart did link the Salon article. Under the headline, before there was Donald Trump, there was Michael Savage. Thank you, Breitbart News. Steve B., thank you. Last night, Drudge had it up for 15 minutes. Thanks, Matt. I'm joking. But it's such good writing. I mean, that, of course I want the promotion, yes. But the writing is so good. And it's a news story unto itself when you see left-wing publications talking about me in a almost positive way. But I got to tell you a funny story. I received an email, I guess I have to remain, it has to remain anonymous, from a man who wrote about me a number of years ago. Very, very powerful journalist who shocked the media when he wrote a somewhat positive article about me in 09. And I sent him the Salon and MTV news articles, and he said, be very careful, because if you get any more of these, you might become ... respectful. Respectable, sorry. I said, that's the worst thing that could happen to me. Yeah. So do I cultivate the outsider image, or am I really an outsider? I ask myself that question. Am I inherently an outsider, or do I cultivate the image? I mean, I have no friends. There's one person outside of my family that I talk to from time to time, and even I, and he don't, you know, always talk to each other on an equitable level. Sometimes we, so, okay, but I was not like this as a youngster. What happened to me? Do you ever ask yourself these questions as you get older? I mean, when I was a young kid, I had a lot of friends. I was the shortstop on the team. I was the popular kid because I could tell jokes. I was funny and I was fast. Tall girls liked me because I was short. I look back on this, really funny. What is it about tall girls and short guys? I don't get that. You know, it's funny. I'm looking back on a lot of things that I've forgotten. But how do you wind up as you get older with no friends? Is it a product of being a conservative, a real conservative, in a super left-wing city? Yes. It's a product of that. It's also a product of a desire for privacy. I'm loved by millions, and basically I keep my own company. It's me and the dog, Teddy and me. Confessions of a Service Human, Michael Savage. Book came today, by the way. I'd be remiss to not tell you it's gorgeous. It's lovely. I love it. I worked so hard on it with my publisher, Ad Hachette. I have to thank Kate Hartson at Center Street for wanting this book. She loves Teddy. I don't think she loves me as much after working with me on some couple of books, but this one she loved. This is a work of love. So here's what I got to ask myself about a dog book, by the way. It's Teddy and me. There's a picture of me in this beautiful, expensive shirt with sunglasses. Teddy sitting next to me, and I'm in my black Hellcat. You can't see what car it is, but it's black, okay? And we're both looking out of the window at the camera. Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human, by Michael Savage. And it's a hardcover book, and on the back you see me in front of a microphone and with Teddy. And it says, the world knows Michael Savage as the scourge of liberal politicians and media, raging against injustice to his millions of fans every day on the Savage Nation. But off the air, he's the service human to Teddy, his constant companion, co-pilot, and best friend. Teddy is the purebred poodle who tames the savage beast the minute the on-air light goes off. It's true. Of course, I think I wrote the copy. But it's really well written, if I must say so myself. I don't remember writing it. Sometimes I write stuff, I don't remember what I wrote. That's good stuff. You know, it's like one of my listeners, wrote to me on Facebook, do you have that coffee thing? Did you guys, I can't believe that Doug found it. What soundbite is that? Just for fun today. Come on, lighten up. Where is it? What clip is it, Robert? No answer. Clip 9. I'm going through 12 pages now of sound bites for you guys. Okay, so one of my listeners, I wish I had where is it? He said he started listening to me in 06. And then his parents were put, I don't have it. If I can't, I can't paraphrase something as touching as that. The point is that he said both of his parents were in, no, I don't have it. Said both of his parents were in nursing homes. He didn't have the money to help them out. They were dying. He felt like garbage. He worked two jobs, and he got in his car at night, and he heard me talking, and I did a shtick on coffee back in 07 that had him laughing. He said, I saved his life with laughter. So I said to Doug Lynn, I said, Doug, come on, you've been with the show a long time. Can you find that clip on coffee, on how I talked about coffee? I'm going to listen to it now. If I don't like it, I'll turn it off. But let's start the Savage flashback on coffee. Let's hear if it's funny, and send me the article.
You used to be a state of the timber industry. It was an agricultural state, a fishing state. How did it become?
Stop. It comes out of it. It was a caller from Oregon who calls me and says he's from Oregon on a late night show. Let's start it again. Go ahead, please.
But you used to be a state of the timber industry. It was an agricultural state, a fishing state. How did it become a cappuccino state? How did it become a state of latte lappers? How did it become a state of latte lapping losers who think that because they know the difference between a mocha and a latte, they're sophisticated? You ever see them online in Starbucks? I'll have a mocha, double estape, latte, pate, lappe. They sound like a bunch of kittens lining up for a milking. You ever see them, all the kittens? They all know the different coffee drinks. A double latte, a half a mocha, a double espresso. I want coffee from the 5,600 foot level of Guatemala. It should be organically raised. Is it a sustainable farm? I want a certificate to show me the farmer wasn't abused. Did the coffee bean go into the pot happy? Was it a happy coffee bean? Was it an abused coffee bean? I want to know if it was white people who were selling the beans or buying the beans or exporting the beans or transporting the beans. I want to know if the Latino people were benefiting from the exportation of the green harvest. And then when I get my coffee, I want it to be from water. I want the water to come from Mount Hood. I want it to be filtered water, special water, boiled water, sensitive water. I don't want to have any polluted water. I don't want any toxic water. I don't want any city water like the ordinary Republicans drink. I want a special liberal water, and I want it boiled a certain way to a certain temperature to mix with my 5,600-foot Guatemalan, a culturally sensitive, eco-friendly coffee bean.
Just before the show, I ran out for a Starbucks. Now, I survived Starbucks.
Oh, there's more to it?
See,
okay,
I gotta tell
funny,
you. I'm in a rush. It's like, 20 minutes before the show. I should have sent someone out for it, but I tend to work alone. I like to be alone. I ran out for a coffee. I figured I could sneak in at that time, though, and bingo, I hit three people ahead of me, and a girl jumps in ahead of me. And the three people, everyone's cute. And what kind of sweet do you want? I think, and there were men, and everyone was with a cute, no one would say, just give me the blueberry cake, or give me the oatmeal cookie. Everything was like with a cutesy thing. Oh, I think I'll have the, oh, you're such a sweetie pie. All right, so I had to live through them. The feet were curling up inside the shoe on that one. I don't say anything. So now there's only one in front of me, and did I hit the lottery with her? I figured she looked normal. She was going to say, coffee and get out of there, but no, here it was. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam, and a soy blast sprinkle, please. I'm not making this up. I said, no. Now I'm getting enraged inside. My eyes are already searching to take it out on something. Again, she repeated, the guy didn't even know what she said. That's right, and a sweet voice on it. I'll have a double grande latte espresso decaf with extra low-fat cream and extra foam and a soy blast sprinkle, please. And then, to top it off, after the guy makes it first, she pulls a coupon.
It's very funny. It actually happened to me, so I don't go there anymore. I take a thermos with me like a real blue-collar guy. First of all, my coffee's better. It comes from a 4,700-foot level in the Kona. No, it doesn't. It's Trader Joe's Kona beans, by the way. They were very, very good for the money. So here's the email that goes with the first coffee thing. Mark O'Neill in 06, someone told this 50-year-old independent conservative about Michael Savage. He writes, I was floored by his intellect and humor. During that year, I would stay with my mom as she suffered terribly in a nursing home. She was unable to advocate for herself. Both parents were declining in nursing homes. I and no job, and the drive home at night was beyond depressing. But there was Michael Savage on the radio during my drives. One night on a drive home in early 07, I got in the car, devastated by my parents' suffering. I said my prayers and turned on Savage. A guy called in really venting on liberalism. Savage encouraged him to let it all out. Then Savage started, and he began talking about how a liberal would want coffee prepared. Despite my mood, I started chuckling. Savage built on his premise. His voice began getting louder as he detailed how the very coffee beans themselves would have to be prepared in a certain way. Within seconds, I was howling. God bless this man, not only for much-needed relief that night, but for sharing his amazing intellect and wit. I wish I had that night's monologue on tape. I listen to Savage whenever I can. Great, great talent. He should be required listening. Sorry, for every U.S. citizen. So we went and found it. Doug found it from 07. How did Doug find it, by the way? Is it on YouTube? Someone stole it years ago and stole my archives? No. You know how much of my material shouldn't be on the up there for nothing? I'm sorry. It's really not public domain. It's the only thing I have is my intellectual property rights. You know, I'm not a communist. I am not a communist. I mean, you don't own my shows. Stop posting them. Okay, that's for the lawyers to deal with. So getting back to the news of the day, which I don't really want to do, but I will do if I have to. Eventually today I want to go through some of the... You know what, the book isn't out yet. It's just I got my copy today, my first hardcover. So if I read some of the stuff to you, it won't be like a read-along where you'll say, I'll go buy it. So what's the point? I'll wait till it's in the stores on May whatever for Mother's Day. And then you'll see it and you'll say, holy God, this is the best dog book ever done. In a way, it's superior to Travels with Charlie by Steinbeck for one reason, because it's more pictures than words. And as you well know today, although I've written both kind of books, including 85,000-90,000 words of politics, I don't think people want long books anymore. I mean, I do see people occasionally reading an actual long book. They're like really heavyweight people. They read books over 1,200 words. It's hard to believe. They actually go beyond the blogs. A neighbor recently said to me that he judges a man by how he treats dogs. This is chapter one. Oh, I agree with that. In fact, I think it was a famous writer who wrote that in those places where we go after we pass, when we get there, our pets are the masters and we're the pets. See, how we treated our pets is how they treat us in those two places. I kind of like that. Now, that's not the reason that I treat my pets so well, but nevertheless, it's nice to hedge your bets. Well, my neighbor and I were also talking about the famous Teddy story of when he tried to rescue an ocean swimmer. Oh, yes. Now, Teddy is a little guy. He's only 11 pounds. He doesn't know how big he is or how small he is. Little dogs are like that. Being a purebred poodle, he is still in great shape, really great shape. Well, about a year ago, he disappeared, and I thought he had drowned. You see, I live next to San Francisco Bay in a small house right on the breakwater. I usually watch Teddy like a hawk. Well, one day I looked around and yelled for him, but he was gone. He was nowhere to be found. I panicked and thought he had accidentally jumped in the water or had fallen in and drowned. I went up and down my street asking all my neighbors, have you seen Teddy? Everyone said they hadn't seen him. My heart dropped. I thought, my God, what do I do now? I took my eye off him for a minute and he's gone. I don't know how I'm going to live with this. Soon enough, a man, another neighbor, who swims in the bay, came walking down the street in his bathing suit. I'll continue this little story from the first chapter of only 10,000 words and a lot of great pictures from my newly published book, Teddy and Me, only available at this time on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Back in a minute.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Your Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust for tangible assets, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-CON. So there's a lot of balls in the air. If you care to play the game of catching one of the balls and playing catch with the audience, there is one open line at 855-407-282, the Savage Nation, on this wonderful Friday. Tom on WABC, thanks for calling from New York City. What's on your mind?
I'd like a clarification. A man of your vast educational background equating communism and socialism and calling Sanders a communist. You know better than that. Why are you?
Hold on. Whoa. Hold on. You want to lecture me? That's fine, but I'll counter it right away. Bernie Sanders says he's a democratic socialist. Is that correct?
Correct.
Have you looked into what democratic socialism actually is?
Yes, I have. I can give you a high school explanation for it compared to.
Well, I can give you a PhD explanation for the fact that you don't know what you're talking about. What Sanders is espousing is exactly what has been tried in South America, in Russia before the wall fell, in Cambodia, and in China. Do you understand that where it leads is not good?
Yeah, it's being practiced right now in Europe and all the Scandinavian countries, and it's a roaring success.
Is it? How's it working out for the Scandinavian countries
that are so liberal that Muslims are raping their women and they're afraid to report it. How's that for a nation that was once a nation run by Vikings and now it's run by Icelings?
So that has something to do with socialism and Sanders?
Yes, it does, my friend. Yes, socialism destroys the individual desire to stand up to a nation. It destroys the individual fiber of every single individual in it. It turns you into a hive person. You start to think collectively, not individually. So if a few women get raped over there by a group of Muslims that you brought in because you're so liberal, you don't think you have to defend them or say anything because it's not your problem. Thanks for the call. There's your PhD explanation, Mr. Wise Guy. Now go back to your pipe wrench and put that into your pipe wrench and smoke it, however that works. Here's an article about poor people, since the call was about communism. New York Post, April 8th, 2016. Casino mogul Steve Wynn, nobody likes being around poor people. Oh, did that set off a shockwave? Well, I don't know anyone who likes to be around poor people. He said, even poor people don't want to be around poor people, which is 100% true, but you have to listen to what he said. Casino mogul Steve Wynn has unleashed a form of storm controversy by telling investors in his gambling empire that his business caters to the wealthiest patrons because nobody likes being around poor people, especially poor people. You see, he's developing a $2 billion casino in the Boston suburb of Everett. And I want to tell you more about what the billionaire had to say about the fact that nobody wants to be around poor people, especially poor people. It's 100% true. You like to be around poor people? I don't. Because all they want to do is take something from you.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
No, I have no nostalgia today. I'm cold-hearted today. I don't feel any warmth. I don't feel any desire to be back in 1957 in a finished basement in Queens. I don't want a ducktail haircut. I don't want a 57 Oldsmobile. I don't want to see all of my relatives who've gone over the other side. I have none of those feelings today. I'm very sober. There's no emotion. I don't even know what this mood is like. I'm just cold, sober. The news of the corruption in the alternative media that you've come to love and respect is so overwhelming, it's like a pail of cold water in my face. I knew there was something to Glenn Beck's histrionics on the stage. I mean, I saw through this fraud from the get-go. All right, so he rose to the top. He made $100 million a year. Everyone thought he was a genius, but now you know the rest of the story. And it's not a pretty story for those of you who follow the media and think that the mainstream media is, you know, owned and bought and liberal and biased. Well, now you're finding out that the other side is owned and bought and biased by special interests in some part. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? So you're going to throw your hands up and say, well, what do I do now? I don't know. You figure it out. You figure it out. Line 7. Welcome to the Savage Nation from KKOH in the biggest little city on earth, Reno, Nevada. How are you today, my friend?
I'm doing good, Dr. Savage. I wanted to say that I served 22 years honorably in the United States Navy. You remind me so much of my very first commanding officer, who was the reason I did 22 years. He was a very fair person, knowledgeable. He explained it if you didn't understand it, and once you did, if you disagreed, he didn't care about that either, as long as you understood it. I just want to say thank you for what you do every day, the chuckles and the knowledge that you into your humor and your knowledge makes me one of the smartest laughers in radio land. I just
Well, naturally, I want to say thank you for that kind remark, and I'm going to send you a copy of either Government Zero or Teddy and Me. Which do you prefer?
Government Zero, I would love.
You got it. Stay on the line. You know, the book is more important today than it was when I published it. I don't want to read from it, but if I did read anything from that book, it would be the Pope's chapter called Lenin's Pope. And you will see the deep roots of Marxism in Pope, whatever his name is, where he came from, how he was handpicked, how he's meddling in politics, how he's violating both the political rules of the United States of America, where there's supposed to be a separation of church and state, and by the way, the theological rules of the Vatican, which he is violating again by meddling in politics around the world. This is a big story. Lenin's Pope, Inside Government Zero. Read the facts for yourself and draw your own conclusions. That's all. Next case. Move on. What do you want to talk about now? WABC, Hank. Welcome, Hank. What's on your mind, Hank?
Yes, I would say next time America's at war, tell the rich to send their kids since they don't want to be around poor people.
I'm sorry, next time there's a war, they should register their kids.
Yes, yeah, send their kids to war since they don't want to
You're 100% right about that, but this was not about that. Casino mogul Steve Wynn said nobody likes being around poor people. And what he was talking about was he was building a high-end casino in Boston. So he said, to put it in a more colloquial way, rich people only like being around rich people. Nobody likes being around poor people, especially poor people. So he's saying he wants to make the casino feel upscale for everyone. And he said that he doesn't want to make it look like an Indian gambling casino in Connecticut. That's what he's saying.
I got you.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. I think get a nuance. Anything is nuance. Steve Wynn says, the company caters to the top end of the gaming world, he told the audience. We're sort of a Chanel, Louis Vuitton, to use the comparison, the metaphor of the retail business. But unlike Chanel and Louis Vuitton, we are able in our business to cater to all of the market by making our standards so high that everybody wants to be in the building. Okay, so you could take it as a slam on the poor, but he's not saying that. It requires, you know, a certain degree of intelligence to understand what he's saying. If you're building a very, 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 very high-end casino to attract high-end people, you want to get the high-end gamblers so you can bilk them of more money, in plain English. This is the old Lenny Bruce joke, because he brought this up in the 50s. I'll never forget it. He wrote, or said in a nightclub once, the comedian Lenny Bruce, no one remembers him. Maybe a few old guys remember him. But he was way ahead of his time. He was an iconoclast. And he said, why does a guy go into a church that cost millions of dollars at the time to build with gorgeous gold filigree stained glass windows? Why does the church have such edifices? So Lenny Bruce said, because a poor guy who has nothing wants to go in there to look up and feel lifted up by the beauty of the building. He doesn't want to go into a storefront church that's as depressing as his own apartment. He wants to go into this beautiful, incredible church filled with the greatest art to be uplifted by it. So now you understand the Middle Ages and the great art of the Middle Ages. Why, you know, how the Catholic Church built the billions of dollars from the people at that time in the Third World to build these edifices and fill it with such great art. Where do you think they got the money to pay for Leonardo da Vinci's work, for example, to paint the Sistine Chapel? And I would say if the Pope wasn't a hypocrite, he would have taken my offer 6 months ago, because I offered to help the Pope redistribute the wealth of the Vatican. I offered $1 million cash on this show if he'd let me send the crew to the Vatican to remove the Sistine Chapel ceiling, because I like to put it in my living room. And he never accepted that offer. I mean, if he did, he could take that $1 million and give it to the poor. Of course, it's a facetious offer. We know it's worth much more. I get it. And we know you can't remove the ceiling. It can't go in my living room. We get that. Everything is nuance. But you have to wear galoshes with ice skates to understand that. How could you skate with galoshes, Savage? Why don't you speak in plain English? Because plain English doesn't work anymore. Plain English is a lie. Most of the people who speak plain English are lying to you. By the way, they're using plain English to, as my father would say, BS the public. Yep, old Lincoln. Benny Lincoln. So now let me turn to the writing of the MTV News article, which is not quite as not anti-savage as the other one, but the writing is so funny, I have to read it again. I went to sleep chuckling. Caleb Horton, MTV, says, hell's been empty. Welcome to Donald Trump's America. It's been waiting for you for quite a while. Okay, he doesn't like Trump. He doesn't like me. I like this one. He says, there are towns like mine in every corner of the country and all over in between. I grew up in one of those places. The news only covers when it catches fire. One of those blue-collar towns where liberals were scarce enough to constitute exotica. If anyone ever saw a Bill Clinton or Al Gore bumper sticker, it'd get pointed out every single time, usually with a nihilistic laugh. If you're reading this on MTV, he writes, you might not know who I'm talking about. Michael Savage is a Bronx native with a nationally syndicated, incredibly popular talk radio show, The Savage Nation. Sometimes he writes books with titles like Liberalism is a Mental Disorder, blah, blah, blah. Their books are kidding. This, I love this line. I loved it. This sent a shiver up my leg when I read this. It was so well written. Their books a kid in the right kind of town might find on the bookshelf of an uncle who knows where all the Air Force bases are. It's so funny. You know, next to a Time Life commemorative volume of moon landing photos and a decorative encyclopedia set. The books get pretty good numbers, by the way. They routinely land on the New York Times bestseller. You know, that's a fabulous line. I see, what I read here is this guy Caleb grew up in a Christian home. The name indicates Caleb is a Christian family. They didn't name him Caleb because they were hippies. And he actually probably grew up in that house where his uncle knew all the Air Force bases were and had a book on it. And then the uncle had a Time Life commemorative volume of moon landing photos and a decorative encyclopedia set. That's how he knows it, and he misses it. So he moved to the big city. By the way, I did say, okay, you're right, Caleb. He wrote on his blog today, Savage thinks I wear a nose ring. I don't. Caleb Horton tweets. Let's see. It says, apparently Michael Savage is talking about me right now, but he's calling me Caleb. Caleb. Going to have to track this down. Michael Savage somehow likes, he said it was lively and autistic. As I was expecting maybe 200% more hellfire. Michael Savage now believes that I have a nose ring. Michael Savage just said one bottle of cognac he drinks is worth more than I make in a month. That really happened in real life. That really happened in real actual life? I don't get it. No, because he was saying Donald and I are like guys sitting drinking cheap booze, right? So, I've got to read this line. He said, Savage makes Fox News at the molten core of its belligerence sound borderline Victorian. Perfect. That's called throwing the dart right in the center of the dartboard. Okay? Then he talks about Trump. And, of course, he doesn't like Trump. And I just want to read the drinking part. I just got to find the part. Here it is. Trump goes on Savage's show all the time, of course. They both love the idea of a wall, of course. And, Caleb, why don't you like a wall? You like illegal aliens sneaking into America and abusing the welfare system? Is that what you like? This is what I don't understand about progressives. I don't care if you're social liberal. I can get that. How can you be a fiscal liberal and not understand that that's why you're not making any money? Can't you put two and two together that that's the reason you've been undermined in your own profession? Because it's called trickle-down poverty. I wrote a book about that a number of years ago. How this worked, remember there was the squeegee men thing in New York? And it was Rudy Giuliani's idea that if you control the squeegee men who were running around New York at traffic lights and using dirty rags to wipe your windshield to shake you down for a quarter or whatever, if you arrested the squeegee men and you let the NYPD take them off the street, all the way up the line, crime would diminish because you got to start somewhere and you start at the bottom. And you clean up the bottom, then the top gets the message all the way up the chain. Well, all of my intellectuals on the other side, all of my intelligentsia on the other side, listen carefully, because I'm trying to teach you something for your own betterment. I got nothing to gain or lose whether you make money or don't. But I actually see you reaching out because you realize the handwriting is on the wall and you're going to be extinct if you don't watch what you're doing. And so here's what I'm trying to tell you. If you don't build the wall and if you continue to bring in cheaper laborers who are not working in your field of writing or journalism, but they're working in other trades where the value of the dollar keeps going down because they're getting them for much cheaper wages, then your wages also go down. That's called trickle-down poverty. Do you get it? That's what I've been trying to say to you. But you see, it's easy to stereotype me and say, oh, he's this, so I don't want to listen to anything he says. But what I just said to you economically makes sense. Trickle-down poverty. Do you understand it? Trickle-down poverty, that's how it works. Unless you rein it in from the bottom. Or shall I say, actually it was called Trickle-Up Poverty, sorry. That was the book title. Trickle-Up Poverty was the title of that great book. My argument was quite direct. I argued that if you increase poverty at the bottom by reducing wages with cheap labor, all wages get sucked down. Enter Mark Zuckerface of Facebook. Why does Mark Zuckerberg, worth $58 billion, want to kick American IT workers out of his company, as he's doing, and replace them with Indians from East India who are very bright and they'll work for $20 an hour, $25 an hour? Why does Zuckerberg do that? Because he's a cheap monster, in my opinion. A greedy, cheap monster. And he wants more profit. And the reason he kicks out workers in America, and I don't know what their race is, I don't know whether they're white or black or Asian or Hispanic or gay or straight, but as he fires the IT workers who are making 65 to 75 an hour and hires Indians for 25 an hour, my friends, that's trickle-up poverty. And it starts with building a wall.
You not only build a real wall with Mexico in order to support the building trades in America and get men back who can do the same work for a legitimate, fair wage, but all the way up the line, the wages go up and America is humming again. That's Donald Trump's message. Do you understand it? If you don't, then please read Trickle Up Poverty. And then you'll understand why I'm telling you we need a wall. And I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust to protect my wealth with gold and silver. Call 800-BUYCOIN. Well, here's some breaking news for those of you into breaking news. It's not on any website. It's a sad story. Former Navy SEAL who claims he killed Bin Laden arrested. They're just thrilled to death at the AOL and all the left-wing sites. Man, are they happy. Rob O'Neill, an ex-U.S. Navy SEAL who says he fired the shot that killed the former Al-Qaeda leader, was arrested early Friday morning in Butte, Montana. I will give you the chain of events that led to his arrest in the next hour on the Savage Nation. Naturally, they're going to trumpet that one because he's a white man with blue eyes and sandy-colored hair. And so, therefore, they can show his picture and shame him. As you well know, that's what the media specializes in. And conversely, here in California, a CHP officer was on the side of the road in the center island, by the way, away from traffic, just yesterday in Sacramento, California, when a man, ran over his motorcycle on purpose back and forth and almost killed the officer. The man, of no ethnicity, of no background, of no name, the man was given chase, and he was arrested eventually. Of course, there's no picture of the man, nor of his ethnicity, nor of his name, because as you well know, in Animal Farm, two legs good, four legs bad. And the only legs that can be bad in California and the liberal press are the legs of the white man. As you well know, that's how it works. That's the sad truth. I realize it feels like chalk on a blackboard, but hey, someone's got to say it. If Bill Clinton can stand up to the Black Lives Matter thugs, I can stand up to the worms in the media who are destroying our very will to go on. They certainly have, we have no faith in them whatsoever. Why do they trumpet the picture of the former Navy SEAL being arrested? And they won't show you the picture of anyone who is not fundamentally of the same ethnicity when a crime is committed. What is that about, Bernie Sanders? I'm looking forward to going to the Vatican. I cannot wait to meet the Pope, because Pope and I agree on so many things. The Pope and I, number one, share a love for Italian food. That's the first thing you got to know, is that we Jews from New York, although I am not a practicing Jew, I do love very much Italian food. In fact, I know many Italian people in the Italian business, in the restaurant business, and they make very good food. And that's why I look forward very much to breaking some bread. Hope it's Italian bread in the Vatican with the Pope. Number two, the Pope and I both agree on climate change. It is true that although I grew up on seltzer, which contains an awful lot of carbon dioxide, I am very ashamed of all the seltzer I have consumed in my life. And I intend to make amends to that through the Pope by creating a seltzer carbon fund. And all those people who have consumed high amounts of seltzer in their life without knowing the damage they were doing will be paying compensation to Gaia through the Pope in order to compensate for all of the carbon dioxide released into the atmosphere every time that seltzer bottle was squirted in Brooklyn.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Talk radio for the thinking person, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I don't know how you would characterize the gang leaders who got 13-year-old kids hopped up on crack and sent them out onto the street to murder other African-American children. Maybe you thought they were good citizens. She didn't. She didn't. You are defending the people who kill the lives you say matter. Tell the truth.
Amen to Bill Clinton. He had the nerve to stand up to the thugs in Black Lives Matter who are holier than thou. They think they have the right to shout anyone down. And in my opinion, they're using race as a weapon. It's a dangerous situation. Not one politician will touch this, but Bill Clinton did. And yet today, after standing up to those thugs, Bill Clinton said, I almost want to apologize for an exchange with Black Lives Matter. Apparently, his wife's handler said, oh, you can't do that. Oh, you can't answer those who would shut you down in any way. You got to let them stamp all over you in order to get the votes. That's a story, a big one. Panama Papers reveal Clinton's Kremlin connection. What's this one? What is this Kremlin connection? This unauthorized documents purloined from a shady Panama law firm that arranged tax havens and perhaps money laundering for the globe's super rich. Includes juicy insights into how Russia's elite hides its ill-gotten wealth. Almost lost among the many revelations of the Panama Papers is the fact that Russia's biggest bank uses, are you ready for this, progressives? The Podesta Group as its lobbyist in Washington, D.C. Oh, my God. Who's Tony Podesta? One of the best connected Democratic machers in the country. You have to be a Bernie Sanders voter to know what a macher is. He founded the firm in 1998 with his brother John, formerly chief of staff to President Bill Clinton, then counselor, consigliere to President Barry Obama. Mr. Podesta is the very definition of a Democratic insider. Well, you get the picture. And by the way, these Panama Papers that all you, I don't know how to define you folks, are cooing over. Did you notice that there are almost no mentions of any Americans who are hiding their offshore accounts in the Panama Papers? I wonder who's protecting them. The whole thing was leaked in order to embarrass only one person. And that was Vladimir Putin. And this was all done at the hand of Barry Obama, in my opinion. President Obama takes Malia to Glitzy Bel Air fundraiser with Julia Roberts, Gwyneth Paltrow, and Disney execs after whirlwind stop in Chicago. Take a guess who paid for the trip. Malia Obama joined her father for a fundraiser at the home of Walt Disney Studios Chairman Alan Horn on Thursday night. Well, nothing wrong with that. After all, don't they all do it? No, they don't all do it. Nobody can get away with it other than him. Because, as you well know, there's a quadruple standard. And as you well know, quadruple standards, like quadruple bypasses, only hold up for a certain amount of time. Maybe she'll get a job at Walt Disney, Malia, when she graduates college, the way that Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton's daughter got a job at one of the major news outlets. Didn't they give that genius, beautiful daughter of the Clintons a $600,000-a-year job for mumbling in a chair in front of a TV camera in the ladies' room that was never broadcast? $600,000. I wonder what favors NBC was looking for. Was it ABC? Sorry, was it CBS? Sorry, was it Fox News? I mean, sorry, was it MSNBC? I can't remember which one of the corrupt networks paid the Clintons $600,000 through a slush fund by hiring their daughter to do a nun show. Well, who knows? There may be a future at Disney for the first daughter or something like that. Tickets for the event in Bel Air to raise money for Demon Cats to win back Republican seats in Congress in order to meet the great man himself and a daughter was $66,000 a couple to meet Obama and his daughter? Obama and his daughter will attend a breakfast Friday. Oh, that's today. At the home of Tobey Maguire and his jeweler wife, Jennifer Myers. Well, any jeweler wife? Why do you have to say that? And his model wife, his jeweler wife, the artist wife, the dancer wife. That means they danced in college for 3 months. Jeweler. What does jeweler mean? I never. What does that matter? Oh, it's a show. She has her own identity. I'm sorry. I'll go run out and look for Jennifer Myers' diamond ring. That is the first of three fundraisers that the corrupt Obama will attend on Friday, and the corrupt tickets are going for $33,400 per couple. What a sick country. What a demented, sick, corrupt nation. It's just sickening. It makes you nauseous. Among those in attendance were the corrupt House Minority Leader, whose name I can't mention, Julia Roberts, a former actress, Gwyneth Paltrow, a laughingstock in Hollywood, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, a has-been, Brad Hall, Katie McGrath, and J.J. Abrams, Lynn Norman Lear and Barbara Streisand and James Brolin. In other words, all the has-beens of Hollywood were there. All the old hacks. Tickets for the event range from $15,000 to $66,800 per couple. Okay, wonderful. Spend your money any way you want. But don't tell me that party is not as corrupt as the other party, please. That opens up 15 open lines at 855-4728. I think I've talked all my callers away. I did so much stand-up and this up and that up and stand down and fall down. I did so much stand-up that I almost fell down. The audience left me. No, I got about 6 callers out of 9. We have 3 open lines. Because once I get on a tear, you know not to call. You know you're not going to get on. When you hear a certain change in my voice, the timbre of my voice changes. You know there's no point in calling. I'm going to go like on a rant for about an hour with an occasional commercial break, and there's no callers. But right now it's all callers. You can call a show if you want. Topics are vast. From corruption in the media, both mainstream and midstream, both midstream and small stream, both big stream, midstream, and small stream media, we find out too many of the people are bought, sold, and paid for by politicians. Came out today in the Daily Caller. Look it up yourself. I don't have to talk about it. To my new Teddy book, which is out finally in hardcover for me. You don't have it yet. It's only available on Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Beautiful book. You'll love it for Mother's Day, and you will. Two, Bill Clinton standing up to BLM. No one else will. Two, Pope, Lenin's Pope. Maybe I should talk about Lenin's Pope. Maybe that'd be a good topic. It's in Trickle Down. I don't want to read it. I'm not in the mood. It's Friday. You may sell 4 books, 500 books. It doesn't matter to me. Many of you think that I'm just here to, like, sell books. I don't care. I mean, if you want to buy the books, they're good books. I put my soul into them, and they're well-written. I bring my academic background. That's enough. But it doesn't change my lifestyle if you buy the book. Do you understand that you're not supporting me by buying a book? I know many of you think you are, and that's nice. Maybe I shouldn't have said it, but, I mean, I'm past that point of wanting money. We all want a certain amount of money, and then there's excess. You don't need any more. That's why I support elephant groups. That's why I pay to have poachers shot and killed in the jungles of Zimbabwe. I support an animal rights group that hires ex-Navy SEALs who hunt down the poachers and kill them. Oh, yeah. It's the only way to stop those people who are killing our precious elephant friends. They kill them. They don't bring them to justice. They don't reason with them. They go out with scope rifles and shoot them because of the Chinese maniacs in China who are buying elephant ivory. The herds are so decimated. You want to see a beautiful, noble creature like that disappear from the earth in your lifetime? I don't. So that's what I do with some of my overflow. Elephant support groups, gorilla support groups, a lot of money to dog rescue groups, dogs to go to prisoners for some kind of program. Dogs to go to veterans who are broken and their hearts are broken. They need a lover, a friend to love, you know. The dog helps them back. It's a service animal. They don't know what to do without them. I don't talk about it because I'm not looking for another halo. I have too many of them and they're hard to polish. 8-5. Some of my one-liners are good today. That's a nice one, Robert. That's the second zinger today. That's the third good one today. The best thing today was, I forget some of them, but that was a good one. I don't need any more halos. I have too many and they're too hard to polish. I like that. Don't put it on my tombstone, please. That's not bad. Maybe we should consider that. What should my epitaph be on my tombstone? Oh, God, I don't want to think about it. I was watching Vikings last night again. And when they came back to the village because they couldn't break into Paris, they went back down the river after losing so many men in boats. They came back to the temporary village they had set up on the banks of the Seine, and their wives and children had been slaughtered by the French who weren't so stupid. Notice the French knew how to destroy ISIS in those days. They took the fight to the homeland. They didn't wait for another bomb to go off in Paris. While ISIS was in Paris, they went to the homeland of ISIS and killed their wives and children. That kind of put a dent into the morale of ISIS. But then again, it was a different time. That's when we had kings, you know what I mean? We didn't have politicians. We had kings, not politicians. But in that series, when they go back and their hearts are broken, they find their wives and children decimated and butchered by the French, who they try to conquer. It was kill or be killed. They build funeral pyres, and they burn the bodies of their relatives. I thought about that, and I'm like, okay, funeral pyre. India, funeral pyre. Vikings, funeral pyre. Do Native American tribes still do funeral pyres? Are they allowed? in America now, not in India. I mean, Native Americans. Are they allowed to dispose of the deceased that way? It's kind of like open-air cremation, but it's... now that I think about that, the Viking way of disposing of remains is kind of appealing. For long years, I used to fool around about... because I didn't think it was going to ever happen to me. It hasn't yet. I'm telling you right now, I'm not speaking from the other world. I used to say to myself, joking, even on the air once in a while, I said, well, how are you going to dispose of her? So I said, okay, here's what I'm going to do. If I find that I have like an illness, incurable, I know I have X months to live, okay, here's what I'm going to do. Take the boat. I don't have a boat anymore, by the way, so I can't do this. Take the big boat out, big 1,200 horsepower cats, and take her out the bay, take her out the gate, fully loaded with fuel, bring a case of vodka, bring some pills, put her on autopilot, headed to Hawaii, because I know she'll run out of fuel somewhere, probably 500 miles out to sea. And that's all. That was one thought. I already lost the other of her six callers. Now, no one can listen to this on a Friday. They're calling for jokes. They don't want to hear about death and dying and funerals and Viking. Does anyone else out there have a morbid sense of humor? Or even morbid thoughts? Do you think there's anything wrong with having morbid thoughts? Why? What's morbid about thinking about it? Oh, no, I'm not going to die. You're kidding. I'm in the prime of life. I'll never die. It'll never touch me. I don't have to think about such things. Well, who's going to think about it if not you? You're going to leave the mess for your wife? You're going to go in the garage with the belt and have a tunnel name for yourself? That's an in-joke. Okay, cymbal shot. Boom. Let me get the cymbal so that you know what I'm talking about. That's all. That's bad. Not a good symbol. It's just a cowbell. So what would you like to talk about? It's Friday. Lighten up a bit. Lighten up. Oh! We got a winner here on the line. I swear, God is my witness. He should strike you dead if I'm lying. I'm not talking to my audience that way. I got a caller just now that I can't take, but I will take it after the break. I swear to God. It's a caller from a man named Chip. Calling from KSFO, who swam with Teddy during the opening chapter. There is a real man who will tell you what Teddy did. I swear to God, this, I didn't call him. He's one of my neighbors, but I didn't want to bother him. I'll have him the minute I come back right here on the Savage Nation. Be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
My Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. It's the only company I trust to protect my wealth. Call 800-BUY-CO. All right. All right, you get the picture. I'm a dog lover. So, the Teddy book's out. Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. You can only buy it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And I open the book with a chapter entitled, let's see the title, I want to get it right, You Can Judge People by How They Treat Dogs. So I open with a story about a neighbor of mine. And my dog went missing, and I thought that he had accidentally jumped in a loss. So I ran up down the street. I said, where's my dog? Where's my dog? Where's my dog? So as I'm saying this, another neighbor who swims in a bay came walking down the street in his bathing suit. He had been swimming off my breakwater that very morning when Teddy went missing. A middle-aged man and strong, he said to me, my God, that dog of yours is some wild animal. And now on the Savage Nation, we have that man himself who called spontaneously, Chip on KSFO. Chip, tell the story because it's true.
Hey, Michael, how are you doing today?
Come on, tell the story because it's true.
Here we go. All right, as you know, I swim about a mile a day in the bay, and I swam by, part of the swim goes by your house, which is along a breakwater. And I was swimming by your house, and oftentimes you wave to me from your porch, and Teddy's there. And so Teddy got away and came down, and I guess you weren't on the porch, and he swam out to me. I swim maybe 10 yards offshore along the
beach.
And he came out and gave me a kiss, made sure I was all right, and then he swam back to the breakwater, and then he ran along for about 100 yards. Got worried again, swam out, gave me another kiss. I said, I'm doing okay. He said, that's great, and went back. And then he got on the breakwater and ran along the breakwater. And he ran along the breakwater probably the better part of three-quarters of a mile.
And when you told me this story, I was floored, because you came down the street and you said, my God, I thought that poodle of yours, that little guy, was a poof dog. Those were your exact words. You said, my God, he has some pair of you-know-whats on him. So he was a rescue. He thought he was rescuing you, and he was running out to kiss you and see that you were okay? I mean, this is an astounding story. Where does a little dog like that get the heart like this, I wonder?
Got the cojones, you know. And, well, you know, the poodle, as you know, you know this, the poodle is actually a rather robust hunting dog by breed.
Yeah, it's a puddle. It's called, it's named for, it's a German dog, and it's a water dog. But poodle and puddle are related. So, okay, so then Teddy comes back after you tell me this, full of seaweed and mud, and he looks at me on the breakwater, and I said, oh, thank God he's alive. And I say, like a Tom Sawyer, I said, Teddy, where were you? And he looked at me up and gave me the little eyes, and he said, what do you want from me? I'm a dog. I try to rescue someone. Can you give me a break? And I took him in the back, and I hosed him down, and I said, my God, you're really brave, kiddo, but be careful, will you? Then I put some fences around my thing so he can't jump in anymore. Hey, Chip, how are you doing? How come you're the only conservative in this whole neighborhood?
Yeah, no, I'll be in the water in about a month, I think. So we'll.
Chip, I want to congratulate you for coming back from that surgery you had. You're really a stand-up guy. You're the only conservative in the whole neighborhood. The other people are brain dead. I don't know how they live here with a guy like you around them, but maybe you ought to wake them up to the realities of the world we live in. Hey, Chip, I'm going to give you a copy of Teddy and Me the minute I get more, okay, man? You're in that book. I owe chapter one to you, Chip. Savage Nation, be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
All right, I'm gonna show you one thing. I'm going to finish up the last thing on Chip's call about the Teddy trying to rescue him, the little town pounder in my book, Teddy and Me. Okay? So he goes out, swims back and forth to the breakwater. Finally, I see him coming down the seawall. And he looks at me and says, I'm sorry, Michael. I just had to do it. It's in my blood. So I write this on page 19 of Teddy and Me. That's the famous Teddy story, probably the best one, and it's 100% true. I told my neighbor that story the other day when he was telling me about how he judges a man by how he treats dogs. I said to him, you do know that Muslims hate dogs, don't you? He said, what? I said, you don't remember that famous story when the Somalis were brought into Minneapolis as refugees? Many of them became cab drivers. When they wouldn't even take a blind person in their cab saying, dogs are filthy, get out of my cab. You don't remember that? His face dropped with horror. This dog-loving friend of mine. I guess you can say you can judge a person by how they treat dogs. That's page 20. So kind of here and there, there's an occasional political statement in Teddy and Me, but mainly it's about Teddy and Me. And I'll read more about it when it's available so you can pick up a copy and read along with me and look at the pictures. It brings a lot of joy. Before I go, there's a picture of me in front of one of my cars, which I've since sold, looking at a red engine. Okay, with Teddy in my arms, and it says, Teddy instructs me on a finer point in regard to this complex Ferrari engine. It's a beautiful picture. But the best picture in the book is us in front of a 1970 Jaguar XKE with three carburetors, and Teddy is sitting in my arm, literally looking at the carbs. I'm taking one of the little oil things out on the top, and I say, darn, those triple cars are complicated, Teddy. It's a beautiful picture, but now, here it comes. The middle of the book, page 59, is the one the publisher didn't want to publish. Had to have a big argument with them over this one. It is a picture of me in bed in my pajamas with Teddy next to me. And I'm reading a newspaper in bed, looking down. I look like Hemingway, and like Hemingway, there's a loaded shotgun in the bed. And the caption is, locked and loaded, ready for bed. So the publisher was afraid to put that picture in there. I said, why are you afraid of... I mean, most people have guns in their houses who listen to my show. I don't want it to think that I'm like Teddy, you know what I'm saying? That was a real picture. So the photographer said, wait, what's that gun doing in the corner? So I said, okay, let's put it on the bed. But Teddy is staring at that gun like he knows what that gun is. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what is that thing? That looks dangerous. So that picture is my favorite. Locked and loaded, ready for bed. Those of you who want to see Michael Savage in pajamas, it's on page 59 of Teddy and Me. That should be a laugh. What we do? Okay, another thing. So I go to my Facebook page, where a lot of people go, and there's an article there linked up from yesterday about the Salon article recognizing Savage as the godfather of Trumpomania. And 32,000 people have been reached since it went up. It's a big number. So someone writes this, Jesse Buchanan says, Michael, it's not two legs good, four legs bad from Animal Farm. It's four legs good, two legs bad. Much respect. He said, okay, thank you. Then we go to the article I posted this morning from the Daily Caller. about GOP establishment money funding anti-Trump talk show hosts like Glenn Beck and Eric Erickson. And so far we have 22,758 people reacting, and they will not accept that the collusion is real. They think it's made up. And this is a very dangerous thing, is that people will never accept anything that they don't want to believe is true, even if they were presented with facts. So I didn't write the article. Read the article for yourself. Read the Daily Caller for yourself and make your own decision. But there's a lot of money, GOP establishment money, that is funding the anti-Trump movement, and they're doing it by buying people in the media to attack Trump, people like Glenn Beck and Eric Erickson, according to the Daily Caller article. And there are other related articles about this particular subject of collusion that are worth reading if you want to know the truth. If you don't want to know the truth, I can't help you. But, you know, for years we're hearing, oh, the mainstream media is corrupt. Oh, the mainstream media is biased. Oh, the mainstream media is bought and sold. All true. Yeah, well, unfortunately, the dam has been broken, and that corruption has now seeped over into other aspects of the media. Let's go to caller Steve on KVOR Radio. Go ahead, please, Steve. What's on your mind?
You were talking about the funeral pyres. I'm a funeral director, and in the state of Colorado, there is a place where they do have open-air funeral pyres available.
And how? Tell me, honestly, I'm not going to be, you know, idiotic about it. How do they do? How do they make the body combust?
They basically put you on a cord of wood and lay you on top of the cord of wood and then ignite it at that point. And then the body...
Very nice. I like the way you didn't say they put a person or they put one on the wood. You said they put you on the wood. I like that. It's very personal.
And what happens is your remains consume themselves after they get to a certain temperature.
Very nice to note. So should a person eat a certain kind of food to help the combustion along the way, knowing they're going to be combusted?
No.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Tracy McCray. Each year, thousands of young football players get concussions on the gridiron. Tyler Sloan is no stranger to concussions.
Just felt like a big hit until I got in the locker room after the game, then my head started to hurt. Just felt nauseous and knew something wasn't right.
No helmet can eliminate the possibility of a concussion happening, but the idea of a properly fitted helmet and a good helmet is to reduce the severity of a concussion if it should happen.
Athletic trainer Jim Williams says, first, make sure a helmet is in good physical condition. Next, spray the player's head down to simulate sweat during a game. When the helmet's on, it should be 1 inch above the eyebrow. If it's too low, pump air into the air bladders inside the helmet.
Chin strap, you want to make sure to go underneath the face mask. I want to make sure that the ear holes line up with the ear. I want to make sure that the back of the head is covered.
A good fit means the helmet doesn't slide around. 2 or 3 days after the fitting, check it again. Every week thereafter, give it a once over. For Mayo Clinic Radio, I'm Tracy McCray.
With your Mayo Clinic Radio Health Minute, I'm Vivian Williams. Chainsaws, freight trains. If you live with a snorer, you know what it can sound like. But do you know what's behind the snoring?
Snoring is the sound that occurs at night when the structures of the upper airway, so basically the throat in particular, are vibrating.
Dr. Eric Olson is a sleep medicine specialist at Mayo Clinic. He explains that when we go to bed, the soft tissue in the throat relaxes, narrowing the airway. If it narrows enough, airflow can become turbulent.
And that turbulence creates that vibration in the back of the throat.
It's a common problem. About half of men and 1 in 4 women snore. The good news is that on its own, snoring is typically not medically significant, but it can indicate another sleep disorder called sleep apnea. It can also be quite disruptive for bed partners. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org.
There it goes. So no Viking funeral. I'm not doing it.
But that's any cremation, regardless if it was that way or in a machine.
In cremation, they take the bones and they also chip them?
Yes, sir.
So like when I went to the dentist and he gave me an implant and he said, do you want a cadaver bone implant or do you want plastic? I said, plastic. So where does that cadaver bone come from that they make teeth out of?
Those are from people that donate their body for science.
Oh, that's great. So I could be, in other words, in my mouth, there could be a communist transvestite, a communist transvestite's bone in my tooth, in my head.
Correct. Anybody who donates their body could be full body or tissue.
I have been feeling weird lately. I don't know. I mean, does it? Because they sterilize the bone before they implant it, I was told.
Yes, they do whatever sterilization techniques, but it is received from a person who donates their body to science.
Yeah, but how do you know who it was? I mean, what if the donor is like a freak, and you don't want that freak's DNA in your head? Yeah, I know they sterilize it, but between me and you, there's no active DNA left in the bone when they put it into your tooth, in your head?
I don't believe so, and I wouldn't have it done either.
Yeah, I'd go for the plastic, but guess what? I said plastic. And a month later, he says it was cadaver bone. I've been acting up ever since. I have migraines, I have triple vision. I'm joking. All right, look, live and learn. What a nice topic. Can't wait for the show to be over so I can head to Joe's bar. No, I don't do that at the end of the show. I don't even drink some nights, truthfully. I make more of it than it is. Some nights I have no taste for alcohol whatsoever. Instead, I do nothing. I just take it cold and sober and just face reality for what it is, as horrible as it is. Sometimes it's good to look right at it and say, the horror. You know, there's a high unto itself of seeing how horrible the world really is. There really is. There's a certain high in reality. Reality is a kick unto itself. If you look at how corrupt and horrible everything really is, you can get a high off it, that the world still goes on. When you think how corrupt Obama is and what he gets away with, how he abuses the presidency and debases the presidency itself on a daily basis and doesn't get caught on it, and AOL chooses to publish a story about a Navy SEAL who got caught with alcohol in his system, sitting in a parking lot, not even driving, and they make that into a shame story, you got to ask yourself if that's not a high unto itself, and ask yourself what kind of vermin write for AOL if they do a thing like that to a Navy SEAL and let Obama get away with virtual, well, let's say larceny. To me, it's larceny to fly around on Air Force One on a vacation and on fundraising on a day and night basis and not have a word written about it because there's a triple standard. But as a comedian recently said about Hillary Clinton on the other side of this puzzle, she has more FBI agents chasing her than she has voters. I thought that was pretty good. I wish that was true about Obama. Then we'd see justice in the world. What else do you want to talk about? Cremation? Okay, now we're going to get the morbid people. Okay, KEYS, Texas. Rod, let's have a morbid story. Go ahead, please.
It's an honor, Dr. Savage. If you're considering burial at sea, I have a friend of mine that is a charter boat captain. I won't say where, but they were chartered to take a young lady out who had died, and they took the casket out, and the idea was to put cement in the casket, and it would sink. Well, the funeral director did not wet the cement and just put cement sacks in. Well, the casket just floated, eventually broke apart, and then the naked body just floated around on top of the surface, and they had...
Very nice. Very, very nice ending. Very, very nice ending. It's something you'd put into a comedy movie, but it's not a laughing matter for the family. They must have been appalled. Did someone pull a body back in?
They were horrified, and the guy, he even hates telling the story, but... I'll
tell you one that matches it. Here in the Bay Area, there's a boat that does burials at sea. But they don't bury the body. They take the ashes of cremation, and they let him off. They throw him off the back of the boat out at the bay, right? So this guy was an inexperienced captain. He didn't know anything about the direction of winds. You know what's coming. He opens up the urn, and the ashes blow back into everyone's face on the stern of the boat. You hear this? Now they're covered with the deceased's ashes. Hair, face, suit, shoes, eyes. Can you imagine a thing like this?
Yes.
Well, at least we could laugh about these morbid things. What are you going to sit here? Worry about what the inevitable is. I'm sending you a copy of Teddy and Me to bring a laugh to your face. That's all I can say to you. These little dogs, or big dogs if you love them, show us a number of things. And one of the things I like most about it is their bravery, their unwillingness to show fear, and their incredible just getting up in the morning and dancing out the door like nothing had hurt them. It's something that is something that dog owners understand. This is the Savage Nation. If you care to talk about morbid topics or political topics, the phone number is 855-400-7282. I tend to think we're going to get the morbid listeners right now. Be here.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by Swiss America, the only company I trust with my financial future. Call 800-289-2646 or Swiss America.
Maybe the single biggest change that we could make in our political process that would reduce some of the polarization, make people feel more invested, restore integrity to the system would be just make sure everybody's voting. Australia's got mandatory voting. Yeah, you start getting 70-80% voting rates, that's transformative.
Well, no, you should have 100% voting rates as they did in as they do in North Korea. Then you'd have a perfect system, Mr. Obama, you fascist, you. You fascist, you. Who do you think you are fooling? So not only does he want mandatory voting, but he probably wants, I guess, if you don't vote. What he doesn't understand, obviously, well, he understands all too well, pardon me, understands exactly what mandatory voting would mean. That means prisoners would vote. That would mean homeless bums would vote. Junkies would vote in junkie clinics. In other words, they'd all vote Democrat because that's where their money comes from. That's what he's talking about because he's a fascist in his heart. What this really means is that if you're disgusted with both parties and you know it's a rigged system and you don't want to vote at all, and that's a vote, too, to not vote because it's a vote of no confidence, he's saying you shouldn't have a vote by not voting. And there's Obama to a T. Obama is, in his heart, a very, very dangerous, evil man. But he's not alone. I'll be fair right now. This just came out. Laura Bush hints she'd rather see Hillary as president than any of the Republican candidates. Now, I have told you for years I didn't like this woman. I called her a Stepford wife puppet from the get-go. And why did I say that about Laura Bush? Because I didn't like her face? No, I know nothing about her face, nor do I care about her face. Because she ran this thing with books when she was first lady, right? And here I was, one of the most prolific, profound, conservative authors in America. And she never once mentioned any of my books. Why? Because they're beneath her? No, because they flew in the face of dear hubby. Hubby dearest, who wanted the Dubai ports deal, who opened our borders, who was a fiscal socialist. So here she is, showing her true colors. And her color is that of the Democrat Socialist parties that want to elect Hillary or Bernie. And so, you know, sometimes the truth takes a long while, and then it shows its beautiful face. In this case, it shows its beautiful face through a not-so-beautiful face. Former First Lady Laura Bush on stage during Tina Brown's annual Women in the World Summit saying she'd rather see Hillary Clinton as president than any of the Republicans running. And now you know the rest of the story. I like that. It's not my line. Kathy, KSFO, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael. I just wanted to say you need to take good care of yourself because I can't imagine a world without you.
Okay. Well, I'm not. I don't think I'm going anywhere in the near future. I didn't buy my funeral pyre yet.
Well, I spend more time with you than I do my husband every day.
Wait a minute. Uh-oh. Now, is he listening to this show, or he's a Democrat?
No, he's at work.
Oh, so in essence, you're having a little secret relationship with Michael Savage by calling me while your husband's not listening. I see what you're doing.
Absolutely. Give Teddy...
All right, well, stay on the line, sweetheart. I'm sending you a copy of Teddy and Me, Confessions of a Service Human. I got my first hardcover copy today. It'll be out in a couple of weeks. It's only on Amazon and BNN. You're going to love it for Mother's Day. I got to send one to my daughter and everyone else.